Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gabaza, and for today, we are getting into a conversation that we've had on a number of occasions, but, doing a bit of a pulse check and, sort of looking at it from a different lens, and that is around online learning, online education, online schools, and we're just going to be having that conversation with the team from COA, and we're going to be understanding a little bit around what they're doing. They specialize grades 4 to 12, and we're just going to get a sense of what's going on in the market and the business model that they have around them. To make sense of it, we've got Lauren Anderson, who joins us. She is the CEO of COA Academy. Lauren, greetings to you.
Great. Thank you so much, Madhu. It's great to be here with you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, thank you so much, for joining us and, for helping to shed some light on what's actually going on out there. Maybe where we can begin is, through COVID-19. I think online learning and that type of thing, it really took off. Not to say it wasn't anything new. People have been doing online learning for a number of years, but we really saw it taking a new dimension during COVID-19. Many schools couldn't continue with their lessons in person, so everyone was sort of forced to become abreast with what's going on in the world of online learning. So where we can begin is to just get a sense of the 30-second pitch on COA Academy. What is it? What is it that you guys do?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. And it's so funny when you talk about COVID and online schooling during COVID, you either have people who absolutely loved it, and then you have many people who get a bit of PTSD thinking about having their children home doing online learning. But it certainly did open up a whole new space to be able to do online schooling. I think for us, one of the things that we learned through COVID and online learning, it obviously opened up the place to be able to launch COA. But one of the things that we really realized was being able to set up a school with online in mind, instead of just having school on a screen, which many of us experienced during that time, being able to set up a school in a way that makes sense for the online space is really what we've done. So we launched in 2021, so towards the end of the pandemic, really our big thing is around engaging education, and so a lot of people that you spoke to around as of online school sort of said that they really felt a disconnect with learning and with school. And so the big thing that we have in mind with COA is around engaging education and creating a space where learners feel engaged with each other, with their teachers, as well as the work that they're doing online.
Because you guys started at the tail end of the pandemic, do you feel like you perhaps missed the boat a little bit there?
No, not at all. I think that a number of schools have started in the sort of last number of years, but many of them, sort of started towards the end of COVID. And really been in a space that's been growing over the last number of years.
All right. Maybe one of the big things where I think you could maybe talk to us is around, obviously, during something like your pandemic, it's a necessity. It's a response to what's going on in the wider environment. Now, post-COVID, and also when we are seeing certain trends around many of the mainstream institutions getting learners back onto their campuses, even in the world of work, many corporates had espoused the beauty of hybrid and remote working, but even they are now getting their teams back into the office and that type of thing. From an incentives point of view, right, what's driving the sustainability of a COA Academy right now?
Yeah, so I think essentially you're asking, I mean, it probably leads back to who's our target market and who's joining Co, because we're continuing to expand. We have new students joining us. We have an orientation every 2 weeks that we have new students joining us. And what's been so fascinating to us is who it is that wants to be joining online learning and why is it growing? And I think one of the things that we always say is we're not competing with traditional schools. We say that there are always going to be traditional schools, and we really do are very supportive of traditional schools. But online schooling really provides an opportunity for students that is different. And so we have a lot of students joining us where mainstream school just really doesn't work for them for one reason or another. And probably the word that we keep coming back to is the word flexibility. And online learning really just provides so much more flexibility. So either you have students who are not enjoying traditional schooling for multiple reasons. Maybe the learning style doesn't suit them. Maybe the sort of socialization doesn't suit them. And so we have students looking for an alternative way of education. You might have parents who are traveling and they need a way to be able to educate their children without any interruptions. And we have a number of students who are sportsmen, who do sort of sports professionally, and they need more flexibility in the way that they go about schooling. And then we have a lot of parents who are also remote working now, and they really see the benefits of equipping their children with skills in the online space. So a lot of how we model what happens at Co in the online school is very similar to the real world, the working world one day, and how so much of that is evolving and moving forward. So really around that word of flexibility and creating something that that our students and our parents really see value in is the way that we're continuing to grow.
Yeah, certainly makes sense from that point of view, and especially given the different sets of circumstances that would lead people to find themselves in that space. Quick one for you would be, what we've traditionally thought of as homeschooling from back in the day, right? Before the internet became a thing, what we considered homeschooling back in the day, how do you think that differs from the paradigm right now around this type of remote learning, especially for the ages, age bracket that you guys are working with?
Yeah. So it's so interesting because the homeschooling environment has also grown exponentially over the last number of years. And it's been interesting for us looking at, again, who it is that has joined COA. And we probably have at the moment about 60% of our students come from traditional schooling background. Probably about 25% come from homeschooling background, another 15% from other online schools. It's been interesting just to see the shifts in homeschooling and what that looks like as well. We often get students who have been homeschooled for a number of years, and parents are then going, oh, I'm getting to the end of sort of my maths knowledge. Maths is often the subject that parents say we need some additional support in, and they'll then move into online schools. One of the things that we really leverage is, and again, around that idea of engagement and saying we really believe that students learn best when they are in an engaging environment, is sort of all of our classes are, and we have max of eight in a class, and our rules are cameras on, mics on, and everybody is part of what's happening in that class. And so our students really get to know each other quite well, which is really great, sort of from a socialization perspective. And what we often say to our parents is also tap into the homeschooling communities in your areas, because there really are some great communities out there that are sort of for the social side of online learning. We also do provide twice a term, we have in-person days where our students all get together and we either do an educational outing or we have a social event where our students get to know each other. But we really do encourage parents to get stuck into sort of the homeschooling communities in their areas too.
When I was in primary school, many, many years ago, I still consider myself a youth, but I admit it was many, many years ago. I went to a relatively small farm school, and in each of our classes, it was 12 to 14 people in each class. You know, quite small. Then when I got to high school, it was much bigger, but it was basically more or less 36 learners per class. When I was in high school, are there any similar formulas to how you are putting together class sizes in interaction groups, that type of thing? Because I can imagine that if you are, even though it's an online environment, there are still learnings from the traditional class that you seem to be, you know, taking on board, you know. So how have you guys thought around that type of thing and the structure?
Yeah, great question. So I'm going to keep coming back to that, that piece around sort of engagement. And our pods of eight is really, again, what we believe is where the learning happens best. And so you're correct that as you go into the higher grades, there are some situations where you have more students in the class, but that always then is followed by sort of smaller touch bases afterwards. So we have a combination of different types of sort of classes that our students will go to. Some of it is where they'll be working through content themselves on a platform. Some of it is what we call a masterclass or a workshop, and some of those are where there's a live teacher. Some of it is where students get together in smaller sort of classes, but always having that coming back to that group of eight that are really tackling sort of subject matter together, working it through along with the teacher, or even in study groups. But sort of there are a number of different sort of size groups that happen through the day, but really with that that call coming back to the pods together.
All right. And because we are from the world of finance, we do need to maybe pick apart the business model a little bit and understand how you guys are doing it. So I'm going to ask, how does Co-Academy make one rand? Yes.
All right. So, I think that obviously being completely online, there's something sort of in terms of how we set up there that is really economically viable, that everybody works from home, everybody works remotely. So in terms of needing to upkeep school grounds or school fields or anything like that, we're not needing to do any upkeep there. Our students all pay monthly. So we've got a monthly subscription model. So students pay school fees monthly, and they're able to join the school at any point during the year. So as I said to you earlier, every 2 weeks we have students joining, and students need to give a month's notice. So we've sort of flipped things a little bit as well, sort of compared to a traditional school where you quite often join for, you have to sort of join at least for a term at a time. We've really looked at the business model of being able to have we call it like a subscription. You attend school, and able to join at any point during the year. And then, what's been really interesting in the growth of Koa is more and more really good content is becoming widely available. And so one of the things that we've looked at as Echo is we've gone, the role of a teacher really is about that facilitation moment, that connection moment, that ensuring that learning is happening well and creating that space and environment for learning to happen. But more and more really good quality content is becoming available online and from all over the world. So we use a number of platforms from a number of countries that we then pull in and we leverage, and we make sure that it maps our, so we IEB accredited, so we make sure that it maps the curriculum, the South African curriculum, and that our students then follow a learning journey that they cover all of the subjects that they need to. And so by doing that, we don't have to create all of our own content in-house, which becomes like that's a very costly sort of part of it, but we're able to leverage really good content that already exists. And more it's becoming either much cheaper to be able to access that, and there are a number of free platforms out there as well that are really quality good education. So we're able to leverage a lot of what already exists. And then obviously we do a fair amount of building in-house where certain pieces of content just doesn't exist already.
I like the fact that you've gone into a bit of detail around content and content costs, because one of my curiosities is from an overheads point of view, because you're running an online academy, like what are the overheads? Content is obviously one of them. I can imagine that probably staffing on the teaching side is another. What else are you spending money on? Because, well, you don't have physical classrooms and you don't have grounds that need to be kept and that type of thing. So what does, what does the expense line, line items look like?
Yeah. So I think you've really spoken to two of the biggest ones. So staffing, obviously, and again, because we're high touch, we have a number of staff at CUR. And then the second in terms of platforms. So both with either educational platforms or platforms that we use for operations or automations and sort of really building out that suite those two places are really where our biggest costs are.
And then in terms of how does, because you did mention at the beginning that there's an element where you do bring people together, periodically, just so that you have those interactions. Is that material in terms of cost?
So what we generally do is it really doesn't cost us a lot. And depending on what we do, like parents will buy tickets to come to different events. So and co will pay sort of half towards it, parents pay towards it. And it's things like we've gone ice skating and then we get and we do it in sort of the three big centres. So we've got in Cape Town, Durban, Joburg, and then we'll get everyone together to go ice skating or aqua branching or going to a museum or something like that. And quite often if we go to, like if we all go to the museum, CO will cover that. And again, it does form sort of part of our costs, but it's not exorbitant amounts.
All right. And part of the journey around the business model, we often talk to businesses and ask them about their funding journey, because at least you guys are in a place where you have your learners and people are paying their school fees on a regular basis, and at least you've got money coming through the door, whereas a number of tech-enabled businesses have to burn through a lot of money first before they are able to get anything off the ground. What was your journey from that point of view? What was I imagine that you're about to use the word bootstrapping to me, but I'm keen to understand what those early days looked like.
So I love this part of our journey, and I think so we did do some bootstrapping at the beginning, but we also were lucky enough to get, we applied for it was a post-COVID pre-seed funding to be able to develop the sort of MVP, and that was through Enigma Ventures. And so we had it was a very small amount, sort of remember offhand, I think it was under $1 million, like right at the beginning, just to get MVP up and running. And then what was amazing is when we started off with CO, we started with 12 students on day one. So it was tiny when we started, and we just got momentum, and we sort of month on month, we just grew sort of after that. And once we saw that sort of what we had, there really was a market for it out there. And I mean, a lot of our growth was through word of mouth. So people just really enjoying what it was that we had created. And grew sort of in a really sustainable way, but in a way that we were able to build the business as well. And so once we saw that that was happening, Enigma Ventures then came in and provided additional funding, we were then able to expand further. And we've just brought on a new, sort of grown over the last 3 years, as I say, just really in a sustainable way and continuous way. And Enigma were absolutely fantastic, just providing both business mentoring as well as funding and support and networking and sort of, sort of that whole side of them. They really have been incredible investors. And we've recently brought on new investors. Now that Curry is established, we're looking to expand further. And the capital have now come on as our next round of investors now in the last few months as we're looking to expand again.
Okay, cool. It's actually what you call this, it's actually quite interesting to sort of hear about that funding journey and the fact that, you've had the likes of Enigma. I think on this specific platform, we actually have spoken to, it should be the Piris, from Enigma Ventures. And also, I guess the fact that it also then shows that when you are doing something like an online academy, that it's different from just launching a school. You sort of have to approach it as if it's a tech startup first, and then you sort of have to bring the learners on board. And where you guys are right now, have you reached profitability yet? Because in the current environment, there's a lot of pressure, on tech-backed businesses, especially startups, to start, generating returns.
Yes, so Co reached profitability sort of as we reached two and a half years, which was really great, especially because we were looking to raise more funds to be able to expand further. So that really put us in a good space sort of going into negotiations for raising funds. And we were really excited. We reached profitability earlier than what we'd initially predicted. The way that we were able to expand. And so moving forward, I think what's really put us in a good place is that we know that the model works. We know that as we expand, we're going from a place of sort of really understanding our metrics and how that will look as we scale and as we grow.
When it comes to a business like yours, and I'm pretty sure that in the fundraising process, this is probably a question that has come up from people as you talk about your expansion plans. You said you started off with about 12 students on day one, and right now you guys are sitting at about 500 students. When it comes to scaling, what are some of the hurdles that stand in your way when it comes to scaling? Is it getting more students on board? Is it maintaining your teacher to student ratios? Is it having a technology stack that's able to cope with increased demand? Like, what is it in your world that sort of either drives or inhibits scale?
Yeah. So I think, some of those things that you mentioned definitely are sort of some of our next challenges that we're moving into. I think the two biggest ones for us, the one is around staff. So again, because we are so high touch, we sort of staffing is really important to us. And so building out our middle management is really important. So much like we say, our sort of high engagement with our students, the way that that happens is through making sure that our staff are also highly engaged with each other and sort of that culture really becomes part of who we are. So building out our middle management has been really important as we grow to be able to manage the growing number of staff that we bring on. And then the second is our tech stack. Just building that out in a way that we're able to scale more rapidly is really important for us and some of our next steps that we're moving into from where we are at the moment.
All right. And then I think just the last piece around the business and the funding aspect is competing wise, right? What do you guys think of as your competition? And do you model yourselves against other schools? Do you model yourselves against, let's say, what are considered traditional online academies? Do you model yourselves around, I guess, general tech businesses? Like, to stay competitive, how have you guys decided, to model yourselves? Because it's very hard to model yourselves, like the school around the corner. Because things are different, but also at the same time, because there's a classroom aspect, because there is a you talk about this high touch factor. It's not like Udemy or something where someone just goes and does their own learning. So from a modeling point of view, how do you guys how do you guys think of that? And in thinking of that, is this something that you can grow continuously on an organic basis, or is this a situation where you have to then start looking at people that are doing something similar and acquiring the growth that way?
So yeah, some interesting questions there. And I think what we have so enjoyed, so again, Mark, who is also my husband, I mentioned he's my co-founder and principal, but he really oversees the educational side. And then, as I say, I oversee the business side. And for both of us, it's been so interesting, sort of being part of the, so from a business side, being part of the startup world, being sort of a lot of connections and networks, being able to attend conferences around tech and what's happening in the tech world, and just seeing a lot of what's happening both in the online space, in the startup world, in the tech world at the moment, that is so different to how traditional schools are built, where we can go, we're not confined by a brick and mortar school. We don't have to have the exact same systems in place that a brick and mortar school does. But we're able to look at it from a completely different lens. So in the way that we, and then I think for Mark on an educational side, again, also going, there's so many things that when you talk to teachers, they want to be able to do in their classroom, but you're not able to do in a physical school. It's a lot of things why people who start going into education because they're passionate about education in certain pieces. And so my example there, sort of where I'm bringing the two of those together, is sort of in the way that students do work, and they're able to do it at their own pace. So if you have a student in, say, in grade 7 who really struggles with maths, and they're able to go at their own pace. So each day they get given an amount, or what we do is we do it over the course of 2 weeks. Over the course of 2 weeks, they need to do a certain amount of work. And we make sure that they're tracking, that they complete the whole syllabus, but they're allowed to do that work at a pace that really suits them and their learning needs. And they're able to do this because we're able to track it really closely because it's online. The teacher knows exactly where the student is in their, in the way that they're going about doing maths. They can see, oh, that's where they're struggling. Like it was particularly on that sum that they weren't able to do, and be able to provide really individualized sort of support to the student. And so, but then if they're really good at another subject, so say they're really good at languages, and they're able to go ahead in their course on in their English course, they're able to go sort of a lot further ahead, and they're really able to spend more time on the things that they need to. Whereas in a traditional class, you've got a teacher speaking, teaching to an entire class. Everyone's following the same. In this 45 minutes, you completing this content, and it doesn't allow for sort of students to really do that, learn at their own pace, and where they need to spend more time, they can. And so that really, in that combination of what's happening in the tech world, sort of what automations are allowing for, what sort of different platforms are allowing for, what AI is allowing for, is really exciting to be able to take so much of that and bring it back into Koa and really enhance the individual learner to really go, what are the things that we know and we really believe allow learners to learn sort of really well. And I've just used the example of it in individualized pace as my example for that. But such an exciting space to be able to sort of bring those two parts together to provide the learning experience that we can.
Yeah, it makes sense when you put it like that. And one of the other things I was then curious about, which is also one of the reasons why I asked how you model yourself, is because when we talk to startups and, you know, the tech businesses, one of the biggest areas of investment is fintech, financial technology, all right? But that's an industry that is beset by a lot of regulation, right? So curious on from an education point of view, because there's also regulation around, I think you mentioned earlier on, you guys are certified with IEB and, you know, that type of thing. What does regulation look like in your world, especially, you know, are there department officials that come and, you know, assess the curriculum and, you know, the learning environment, assess your learning outcomes and, you know, all of that stuff? Like how I guess what I'm asking is, has, I guess, the regulatory environment in South Africa sort of evolved itself to the fact that people are now doing so much learning online?
So as you say correctly, we are accredited by the IEB. So that's really who we work closely with for our matrics receive an IEB certificate when they've finished with Koa. And so at that stage, our teachers work very closely with the IEB, and there are a number of processes that we need to have in place. Our exams get moderated. A number of our matric teachers last year went up to go and mark IEB exams, which is really great for us because they then get to see sort of what the standard is at the IEB and ensuring that we're reaching that that standard. But we work very closely with them to ensure that we're reaching all the required, sort of everything that is required to prepare our matrix for their final exams. And then when it comes to the Department of Education, they're busy working on a number of those policies currently. So we work closely with the IEB, who in turn works closely with the Department of Education. A number of those policies are in draft at the moment. But quite an exciting time to be able to be working along with them as those policies are being drafted.
Yeah, it's certainly an exciting time. I'm waiting to see how the policy environment actually evolves, over time around that thing, because South Africa has stated that, you know, education needs to be invested in seriously. And I think as a department, it's probably one of the ones that sees a lot of funding, going through the system. And if we're going to have more and more online players in this space, then, you know, what type of an enabling environment are we creating to make sure that learners have the best outcomes from that point of view? But where I want to end today's conversation, Lauren, is to touch on something that you mentioned just now. That is probably the biggest thing anyone is talking about in the world of tech, and that is AI or artificial intelligence. We've seen and observed that for a number of online for education technology players, AI, you know, has created a bit of an existential crisis for a number of platforms, especially the ones where it's a single person who just has to go and complete a course or is looking for specific information. That model has been disrupted quite a bit by AI. I imagine that for yourselves, because you have a classroom aspect and teachers, and you know that the relationship is a bit different. So maybe you could just talk to us about, you know, your relationship as COA to AI.
Yeah, so we're really excited about what AI can bring and the benefits of it. We obviously see where the pitfalls are. We've got a really great blog that was written by our head of academics and our principal on the good, the bad, and the ugly of AI in education. But what we sort of, our stance really is to equip our students to know how to use AI. So we say to them, you know, if they get given a sort of a essay that they need to write, how to go about using AI in a way that can really help them. So things like asking questions on, you know, how you go about structuring it. But then on the other side of that, we also have really really great platforms that we use that are really good at detecting when AI is used. And so we have a zero tolerance policy of, we often with the younger grades, we'll be a bit more lenient. If anything shows up that it's been written by AI, they have to resubmit. And if they resubmit and still didn't, they get zero. So we've got a very strict policy on it. And the tools are really good at picking up where sort of AI has been used. But really, training our students on how to use it. So we do a lot of staff professional development around AI, and we get external people coming in to teach on it. We do a lot of sessions with our students as well about how best to use it, how to leverage it, how to use it for their benefits. And we also, we're excited about what we're seeing on sort of a number of educational platforms. An example is Khan Academy, is one that many people know. That's a maths platform. And they have a fantastic tutor who is an AI tutor that as students are going and working through, if they've got a problem, they can ask the tutor to be able to help them to sort of where they've got a specific problem. And so there's some really great ways that we'd be able to use AI. I think in the future, I've spoken quite a bit about flexibility and around individualization and how to individualize learning journeys for students. And we really see that in the future that AI is really going to be able to assist and help with that in understanding a particular learner, sort of what makes them learn well, what are areas that they're struggling in, and really how to create that journey for them. So, we see the parts where, sort of as I said, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly, and we see all of them, but we do have a positive sort of stance in it, and we're really excited for what it can bring into education. But I think, that piece on educating our students on how to use it and how to use it well is really important. And we do that from quite early on, just really bringing that into the way that we train our students.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to watch. It's I wish I was a student during this time of AI, particularly, especially at university level. I'm hearing that that's where the real battlegrounds, are happening between. I saw something, it was actually written just before ChatGPT came out, and they talked about the death of the college essay. And if you think about where we are now and, you know, all the stuff that's being written, it is quite an interesting space to be in. So I wish I had been a student during this AI time. It must be fun. I'm hearing that universities, to your point, a number of universities have been developing tools that can detect if AI has been used. But at the same time, there's a whole community around students that are creating student-focused AI platforms. So it's
time around it.
yeah, that's very true. So that's where we end off for today. It has been a really great discussion, just understanding what's going on in the online learning environment in South Africa. Talking to COA Academy, and Lauren just giving us some insight to say that online learning is something that didn't just die with the COVID-19 pandemic. pandemic. For some, it's just become a way of life, and for others, it's just allowed them to continue, operating the way that they have. Not everyone has the ability to be in classroom, and in some certain cases, some people just don't enjoy it, or just are not accustomed to the standardized way of learning. So if there's some type of a way that technology can be used to personalize learning, and especially given the fact that they have those smaller environments, where they have, she called it high touch, where basically we're talking about a relatively small group of students interacting with one teacher, so that you can have, we often talk about the care and attention, from the teacher. And if you can have that, as a number, we often used to talk about it back in the day. I went to Rhodes University, smallest university in the country. And we often used to say that your lecturers actually knew who you were, as opposed to you being just a student number. It's a concept that I can definitely, relate with. Also, just talking about the fact that they have found themselves, with an interesting, business model. People do pay, school fees, as you expect from any other, place of learning. But you do approach your costs and overheads in a completely different way, because, this is a, in essence, a tech business after all. So, we know that tech businesses, tend to be quite, expensive to build, run and maintain. But, Lauren just giving us a sense to say that they did reach, good level of profitability after year two. And, they have been raising money, giving us some thoughts around, how they are thinking around possible expansion, and, some of the difficulties that they are looking to work through as they expand, such as, just having the right technology in place. I think she highlighted, she called it middle management, to say that that's going to be a big focus of theirs, just having the right number of staff and the right, people overseeing, that manpower, to direct the learning, around their curriculums. Also talking about the regulatory environment, and then ending off, chatting about what's going on in the world of AI. So that's been it. It has been a great discussion. Thank you so much. We were in discussion with Lauren Anderson, who is the CEO of Koa Academy. Lauren, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.